This week, Click dives into facial recognition and surveillance.
Police are pushing ahead with live facial recognition, deploying specially equipped vans to events such as London's annual Notting Hill Carnival.
There was no way of knowing whether you were being watched at any given moment, how often or on what system the thought police watched any particular individual was guesswork. It was even conceivable they watched everybody, all the time.
Welcome to Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. I'm Professor Jules Pretty, and I'm journalist Martha Dixon. This episode is the Big Brother episode. New surveillance techniques being used across the world are causing quite a stir. New technology that the world is just starting to understand.
They record even what we're thinking, you know, like that spontaneous thought that ends up in a Google search.
The University of Essex has led important research to lend facts to the debate.
You know, academic research is crucial. We live in a time where, you know, hot takes and opinions are often seen as facts. And, you know, it's a cliche about being in the kind of post-truth world.
Helping partners understand the full impacts on society of new technologies like facial recognition.
That's the beauty of partnering with academics, because they can deep dive. You know, they've got the resources, or they've got the expertise to really deep dive into these human rights issues.
All the time, they'll shoot me. I don't care. They'll shoot me in the back of the head. I don't care. Down with Big Brother. They will shoot in the back of the head. I don't care. Down with Big Brother. Down with Big Brother.
George Orwell's dystopian novel, 1984, is still performed in theatres today, over 70 years after it was written. The word Orwellian is used to show control over surveillance.
I don't care. Down with Big Brother. Down with Big Brother. Down with Big Brother.
Something today's thinkers are pondering in the real world.
So my name is Dara Murray, and I'm a senior lecturer at the School of Law and Human Rights Centre at the University of Essex. And I work primarily on issues to do with human rights and new technologies. And so really looking at what the impact of new technologies are on our society. The world is changing pretty dramatically with the advent of digital technology and things like, well, I suppose both computing power, but also things like our smartphones, which record, you know, who we talk to, where we are. They record even what we're thinking, you know, like that spontaneous thought that ends up in a Google search. And what it does is it allows for much more pervasive surveillance. So it allows the state to gain a pretty much unprecedented insight into the day-to-day lives of individuals. And what that does, it shifts the balance of power in terms of the knowledge between what the state knows about individuals and then individuals then ability to act anonymously. And so that's where we are at the moment, is really at the start of that new era. And what we're trying to do is to understand it better and to understand how human rights law can respond more effectively in order to protect the type of society we want, I guess. We are playing catch up, I think, because technology is moving so fast. And not only technology is moving fast, but we're moving very slow. You know, I think there's a lot of tech kind of phobia. People are reluctant to engage in different areas. And there's an uncertainty. And I think for a long time, this type of work was almost treated as dystopian. You know, the types of things you're talking about are like, that could never happen. But if you look at, say, what's happening to the Uyghurs in China at the moment, it is happening. And so what we're trying to do is to get ahead of the curve, I guess, to a certain degree, by really thinking through the theoretical underpinnings of human rights law, to think of human rights more as not only protecting individual rights, but also protecting society, you know, protecting societal functioning. And that's kind of the part of the groundbreaking element. And I guess the other thing that we're trying to do too is to change how human rights work is done. So instead of like the most common form, I guess, of human rights work has been to like the traditional kind of approach of naming and shaming, or an after-the-fact accountability. You know, you take someone to court because of a violation that's occurred. And what we're trying to do is to be much more proactive and to engage with people at the start of the process. So say like, okay, if you're going to deploy, say, facial recognition technology or this type of surveillance software, can you do it in a human rights compliant way? And we'll help you think through what that would look like.
To understand this new world better, the team from the University of Essex undertook groundbreaking research. They partnered with the police, going out with them to monitor facial recognition technology being trialled, where cameras monitor public spaces and individuals can be picked out and followed. Here's Professor Pete Fussey.
We were sort of doing the research really at a time when there was a big public debate about this issue. And so we were, myself and my colleague Darren Murray, were invited in to observe the Metropolitan Police trials of this technology in London and produce a kind of report about, you know, the human rights implications of this. And so in terms of using that work, well, we published a report, it got sort of quite a lot of media exposure around the world. So we were, you know, pleased that we contributed to the public debate. But in terms of specific users, I think there are several different categories. There's obviously the public and political debate. So we had meetings with politicians, the work was discussed in Parliament, for example. In the UK, we've had discussions in the United States where there's a parallel debate happening, which there it's a lot more contentious, really, and it's very much tied to the current moment in racial justice campaigning. So we've had, you know, quite sort of a series of interesting talks with sort of both advocacy and civil liberties groups there, but also with people who use the technology. We've engaged with EU bodies such as the Fundamental Rights Agency, which is the European Union's kind of body that deals with human rights issues. So we've had a lot of engagement with them.
Pete says their research threw up some important recommendations for users of the technology.
I think there are several different areas really of specific outcome. One is about the sorts of authorizations that people need to go through in order to use these technologies. So, you know, you can't just, so if you take a different example, you know, the police can't just park a car outside someone's house and watch somebody for days on end and watch who, you know, take a note of who comes and goes and things like that. They have to have, you know, a reason for that. They have to have a level of suspicion. They have to deem it necessary and proportionate and those things. So transposing that idea and thinking about how that works with technology is one of the things we did. So at the moment, the way in which these technologies are authorised, you have to fill in a data protection kind of audit. And our work really said that, you know, that whilst that's useful, that actually there's a range of other implications. There's a range of other things at stake here. There are a range of other rights that are affected beyond privacy. So we emphasise quite a lot about how when you're thinking about using this technology, you have to take account of all these different rights and these different implications. So that was one thing. And then I think the thing as a social scientist I was most interested in really was how technology affects people's decision making. So for example, if you're, you know, on a police operation and you're looking for people who are suspicious and a computer tells you that the person who walks past the camera is your suspect, now to what extent do you believe the technology? To what extent do you believe, you know, what the AI is telling you? So particularly if you're then going to engage somebody on the street and ID them and then start to infringe their rights, to what extent can we trust the technology? And that was really interesting in terms of where the scrutiny comes, particularly when technology such as this is quite new. It's not as tried and tested. You know, there's lots of people who'll tell you it's perfect. And I've spent a lot of time sitting in police vans and I can tell you definitely that it's not perfect. And, you know, that's something we emphasised in our research. So really it was about, well, how do you bring scrutiny to the computer decision making? Why, you know, how do you challenge what a computer is telling you and not just believe what it's saying? So those were some of the questions. So those are some of the issues that we got into the guidance in terms of having meaningful scrutiny over decision making, making sure people's decisions that they make for whatever reason can be audited somehow, you know, ensuring that if the wrong person is identified, that there are various things that are in place to reduce that happening and so on.
The important findings by the team at the University of Essex are now embedded in national guidelines on the use of facial recognition technology. They're useful for the police and the government as a new age of surveillance techniques dawns here. The guidelines are also useful for those who want more scrutiny over the use of the technology, like human rights group Liberty.
My name is Emmanuelle Andrews and I'm a policy and campaigns officer at Liberty. Liberty is a human rights organisation that for more than 80 years we've championed anyone whose rights have come under threat. We believe in standing up to power and advocating for civil liberties and human rights. What was really important and what University of Essex did really well was that they went on police rides and they were shadowing police ultimately when it came to them using this tool. So they saw firsthand the damage that it was doing to our communities. You know, it wasn't grounded in a kind of theoretical what might happen if facial recognition is used. By the fact that they were going with police to see how it was used in practice meant that they could ground their research in the very real life experiences of the technology being used on our streets. I think it's really important that people working in human rights have good relationships with academics. A lot of the time, you know, if we are trying to base our research, our advocacy in an evidence base, you know, we need independent academics to be doing that work and doing it really well. I think that's the beauty of partnering with academics, because they can deep dive. You know, they've got the resources or they've got the expertise to really deep dive into these human rights issues that often campaigners and organizers and activists are, you know, we don't have the luxury of time to you know, do such a deep dive into the nitty-gritty issues of these things. So the fact that the University of Essex is doing this work is incredibly important. I think especially in the UK, you know, a lot of the research has been coming out of the US, and whilst that is really important, we need to understand how this technology works on UK streets. We need to understand what this tool can do in the hands of British police in particular. And so that's, you know, having localised research is incredibly important to our work at Liberty.
For Liberty, what was particularly important were the figures found by the University of Essex demonstrating that facial recognition technology often gets things wrong.
The research that we have had the privilege of being able to read and think about from the University of Essex has really revealed many of the problems inherent with facial recognition technology. So, you know, the fact that there's a high rate of false stops means that the human rights infringements are not just it's not just about the technology itself, but also the way in which the technology is used by the police. So if the Met Police are, you know, have a 96% inaccuracy rate in terms of the flags of who the facial rec technology is identifying as criminal, ultimately, it really brings into question how it can be used safely on our streets.
Pete Fussey says he also believes partnerships are the best way to achieve credible results.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, I think this particular project in the last few years has been, you know, the most interesting and exciting of my career. You know, I'm very fortunate the team I'm involved with, there's around 40 of us on our project, and, you know, many of them have, you know, very strong connections with UN bodies, for instance. The more, you know, I progress through my academic life, the more you realise, you know, there's a real complexity to these things, and, you know, you can't really hope to understand things perfectly without engaging with other people, particularly people you disagree with as well. I think it's really important, particularly at a moment now where, you know, it's very easy to get into a very adversarial kind of argument with people, but actually I think I've learnt the most from people that have challenged me. And so with the work we've done, you know, it's often seen as adversarial and anti-police, and it's not. I mean, we couldn't have done the research without the police being transparent and letting us do that. And having those sorts of dialogues are really, really important. But in terms of my own learning, yeah, absolutely. You know, technology is, and the way technology affects society is really complicated, and it's only getting more complex.
Dara Murray says he feels the area of research they're working in is important for everyone's future.
The potential for facial recognition technology in a city like London, for example, is that you have CCTV cameras everywhere. You know, it's one of the most CCTV heavy cities in the world. And the danger with this technology is that over time, they can all be linked up. So facial recognition can be installed across the CCTV network, which then effectively allows for the recording of your activities. So everything you do, more or less, over the course of a day, at least in the public space, where you go, who you meet, with the huge advances in computing power and the decrease in the cost of storage, it means that record can be maintained. So it's possible in the future to create a database that has tracked every single individual's movements across the city over time. And then, of course, that can be subject to analysis. And that has massive potential implications for things like your ability to protest, you know, how you oppose the government. I think what's important is that as academics, we have time. You know, we have time to do research and to think through the different issues and to then work with people who are, say in this instance, the police or other agencies in order to help them with their own processes. You know, I think the reality is that whether you're in government or in an NGO or, you know, any different sector, you're very time scarce. You're focused on delivering your day-to-day activities and you don't really have the resources to think things through in the way that you might want to. So I think our role is to help people do that. You know, what we're trying to do is to figure out how human rights can respond more effectively. What other actors are trying to do is to figure out how they can use technology more effectively. So it's really the start of a conversation, I guess.
With academic work, you know, to do something that you believe in and you think is having a positive impact is really, really important. You know, no one goes into academia for the fame and money. So, you know, you've got to get some joy out of it somehow. So I think, you know, in that sense, but yeah, so, you know, academic research is crucial. We live in a time where, you know, hot takes and opinions are often seen as facts. And, you know, it's a cliche about being in the kind of post-truth world and so on. But, you know, the fact is, you know, academic research and considered understanding of complex issues takes time. And just because it doesn't happen rapidly doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. So, you know, particularly at the moment, it's really, really important to have that kind of high level, you know, grounded, robust research. And, you know, opinions are always improved by having, you know, recourse to evidence and science and facts. So academic research is crucial in this space.
You've been listening to Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. This episode was all about new surveillance technology and how groundbreaking research from the University of Essex is ensuring human rights are not ignored. Thank you for listening. You can find all our podcasts as well as more information about the contributors and their subjects at the Centre for Public and Policy Engagement at the University of Essex.